Good morning, Connecticut. And to our friends across the Sound, it's Director of Public Affairs, John Vokette. Thanks for tuning into the award-winning For the People, bringing you the latest information to help address concerns in our communities tied to youth, the economy, public health and safety, aging, education, and the environment. Well, October is Manufacturing Month, and later this week, it's the 30th anniversary of the Federal Women's Business Ownership Act. So we're going to be crisscrossing Connecticut to talk with a number of women who own or lead state manufacturing firms to learn more about how manufacturing is becoming the place to work, whether you are a young woman exploring career ideas or an adult woman entering or transitioning in the workforce. Then we're going to close with the first of a two-part chat featuring the founder of Transitions Mentoring Program at Family Reentry. And we're going to invite you to support this critical and successful incarceration transition initiative at an event coming up next weekend in Orange. We'll be back with these segments and more on the award-winning For the People with me, John Vokette, right after this reminder. Speaking of women in business, the 2018 Business Women's Forum, Connecticut's longest-running annual full-day leadership conference, is coming up Tuesday, October 30th at the AquaTurf Club in Plantsville. This year's event will feature a keynote conversation with Bethany Frankel, creator of Skinny Girl Cocktails, TV talk show host and star, and motivational speaker and actress Linda Larson. And both women are best-selling authors. The conference is going to include four professional development workshops, two speed networking workshops, breakfast, lunch, networking, and a closing reception. The 36-year mission of the BWF is to raise monies to provide scholarships to female post-university students pursuing degrees in business, and it's a program of the Greater Waterbury Chamber of Commerce Foundation. For tickets and information, or to register, just visit 2018BWF.com. That's 2018BWF.com. Well, as you heard in the introduction to the program, October is Manufacturing Month, and up this week will mark the 30th anniversary of the Federal Women's Business Ownership Act. So we're calling a number of women business executives in the manufacturing field, and we're going to start with Barbara Eck. She's CEO of Durco Manufacturing in my hometown of Waterbury. Great to start right in the neighborhood, Barbara. Great to meet you. Thanks for joining us on the program.
Well, John, thank you for having me on today. I really appreciate this opportunity.
So tell us about Durco. What do you guys manufacture?
Well, Durco is a multi-spindle screw machine company located, obviously, in Waterbury, as you said. And we manufacture metal precision components for OEMs across a multiple market sector.
And what is an OEM?
Original engineered manufacturers.
Okay. And you supply to a diverse bunch of clients?
Yes, everything from medical, aerospace, industrial fasteners, electrical components, even costume jewelry.
Fantastic. So what brought you to Durco? Were you involved in this kind of work your entire career, your entire life?
Oh, not at all. Not at all. Basically, what and how I became part of Durco is my dad was a very successful multiple business owner. And Durco and I became affiliated when my father wanted to buy another company. And in that acquisition, it was a machinery acquisition. And then it turned to, let's see what we can make with this. Unfortunately, several years after we started, I believe like 8 years after we started building the company, my dad was killed in a car accident.
Oh.
And that left me at the helm. And now, 10 years later, here we are, growing about 300% since his untimely death. And continuing and hoping to grow more in the next 5 years.
Well, I'm really sorry about your dad, Barbara.
Well, thank you.
But tell us, how big is your workforce? Are you a big manufacturing, medium, small? How many folks work at Durco Manufacturing?
Well, Durco has 12 employees at present, and we are considered small. We occupy a 10,000 square foot facility in Waterbury. we're diversified in our client base. We make a lot of gun parts as well, so that was strategically our beginning. But now it only represents 3% of our market. We are trying to diversify into larger markets. We're exploring FDA approval to enhance the capabilities that we can provide to the manufacturing sector.
Mm-hmm.
And with all due respect, sales drives it, so that's what we focus on daily.
Well, let's switch gears and talk a little bit about women in manufacturing and tap your expertise, Barbara. What advice would you give to a woman, whether it's a young student who's thinking about their future career or an adult who might be looking to get into the workforce or change jobs? Let them know a couple of important things about getting into manufacturing.
Okay, well, for women particularly, you got to be strong. You have to be willing to push your voice a little bit louder so that you can be heard. I've been in situations where, especially because it's male-dominated, that the men all believe they've got all the answers. And that's good. And you can get a lot of answers from them, but sometimes they don't want to hear yours. So you've got to be a little bit strong and thick-skinned to stand up to that and don't cower to it. My advice to a woman or anybody getting into manufacturing is none other than that of which my dad told me, and that was constantly try, constantly listen to your intuition, because Mother Nature gave you some unique skills that are inbred in everyone. Seek as much knowledge as you can. That includes looking for resources such as the ones that I've been able to tap into, the Manufacturing Innovation Fund, the Department of Economic Development, the Center for Advanced Technology. I've all been services that I've been able to tap into that have helped me grow. Then I would say always find improvement. There are a lot of introspection has to be performed within yourself as well as with all your employees. Because with that, I feel you can gather new ideas. Sometimes those ideas are right in front of you, but you fail to see them. So by collaborating and doing a lot of searching, and I don't mean searching to nitpick, searching of ways to improve. And the other thing is to explore and be open-minded. Be willing to try things that you've never tried or even that you don't believe might work, because sometimes it's the littlest tweak that makes all the difference. And my best advice from a woman to woman's voice would be, stand tall. You got this. You can do it.
And from a practical perspective, talk a little bit about, in closing, the manufacturing environment and the livable wage and benefits that a woman might be able to enjoy if she decides to consider a career in manufacturing.
Living wage. Well, a living wage is definitely driven by profits. So if you can maintain your profits, sell your profits, you do have the opportunity to make a great living wage. It's part of...
Good working environment over there, Durko?
The working environment for me is, I feel, very comfortable. It's not as stressful as some of the other jobs I've had in my life. What makes it good is that every day is a new adventure. It's not monotonous. There's always something different going on, and that's what makes it exciting and the reason to get up in the morning and do it again.
Fantastic. Well, I want to thank you, Barbara, for helping us kick off this series of interviews right there in my hometown in Waterbury. Barbara Eck is CEO of Durco Manufacturing in Waterbury, and we're going to move on and talk to a number of other women here during the 30th anniversary, or I should say ahead of the 30th anniversary of the Federal Women's Business Ownership Act during October, which is Manufacturing Month. Barbara, great to meet you, and thank you so much for your important information this morning. Take care. Our next guest is Jill Bryant Mayer, and she's president of Bead Industries, just a stone's throw from where we're broadcasting right now in Milford, Connecticut. Jill, great to meet you. Thanks for joining us on the program.
Thanks for having me.
So first of all, tell us a little bit about yourself and how you found your way into the manufacturing industry.
Sure. So I'm a fifth-generation family member. My great-great-grandfather started the company with his son in 1914. So mm-hmm. we're 100 years old, 105 to be exact. We started out manufacturing bead chain. You might remember the bead chain from the dog tags in the military. Mm-hmm. We also have keychains and bags and different products. So that is a product that we still continue to supply, but we now manufacture electronic contact pins using the same process and the same machines to do the work.
Did it require a lot of readapting or retooling the machines to kind of switch from that old school application into something that's so cutting edge?
Yes, definitely. We re-enhanced the machines. We have some automatic processes now with those machines. We use different types of metals, different sizes to make the electronic components, and you know, we're in a number of different industries that we weren't in before, and you know, we make millions and millions of these pins. With the chain, we used to have to assemble the products. We do some electronic assembly, but that's also automated. So we definitely had to change ourselves and reinvent, and we're still doing that today.
Hmm. Are there products that any of us might use in everyday life or in specific applications in our homes or in our work where the pins from Bead Industries might be used?
Absolutely. So we have some pins in specialty lighting products. In medical facilities or water treatment plants, we have a lot of our pins are in automotive sensors, which, you know, a lot of those sensors are in the driver, the cars that have drivers, and a lot of the new sensors that we're making will still be around when we have the driverless cars.
Oh, okay.
So plenty of sensors needed.
Very good. Well, now let's change gears and talk about your workforce and the opportunities that you provide to the folks who work for you at Bead Industries.
Sure.
How many folks do you have working there?
Okay, so we have close to 50 people, 50 employees at both of our locations. We have another location in Cheshire, mm-hmm. and we have a great group of people. We have a lot of men and women. We actually have more women than men, believe it or not, in employees. So.
Hmm. Well, what are some of the things that you hear from anybody, young people or adults, common misconceptions that they might have about entering a career in manufacturing?
I think some of the misconceptions might be that there it's not high tech. You know, you've probably heard the dark, dirty, dangerous. Our shop is super clean. It's bright. We have some bright colors out there, great lighting. You know, it's just an enjoyable place to work. Plenty of space, plenty of opportunity to grow, and, and so we just, we enjoy it.
And do you draw your workforce mostly from schools and organizations that provide the training that's specific to the types of machines that you use at Beat Industries?
We do have a number of partnerships with some of the local tech schools and community colleges, and we absolutely send our employees there to get some training. There's a number of great programs that have even kind of after-work training and developing additional skills to keep our workforce, you know, on their toes and challenged. And so we absolutely do that.
Oh, and what do you see as the future for either young people or adults that might be looking for a new career or to begin starting in the workforce as an adult when they might consider manufacturing as an opportunity?
I mean, I would strongly encourage it. We have a lot of opportunity for growth in our company, and you know, if I could go back in time personally, I would get an engineering degree. I'm more on the business side, but I just think if you've got a curious mind and you like how things are made and built, and you want to be a part of developing and creating something, you know, engineering and manufacturing is the place to be.
Well, you said earlier that you have more women than men that are working for Beat Industries, both in your Milford and Cheshire facilities. What are a few things that you hear from these women who work for you when they come back to you and say, you know, I really like working here? Tell us a little bit about what you're hearing back from the front lines there of your workforce.
They love it. They enjoy being a part of the problem solving nature of it. They love, you know, interacting with the products and the process. You know, I think that there's some natural instincts that women have to sort of ask tons of questions and get under the hood and really find out why things are the way that they are and how they can improve. So I think whether you're a man or a woman, it's just an exciting industry to be in. And now that there's much more women than there used to be in the manufacturing industry, it's just become a really wonderful place to be.
And as you're talking to your colleagues across the state, especially those whose manufacturing companies like yours are part of a multi-generational situation where there probably were mostly, if not all, men working in that company up until relatively recently, do you share an attitude with a growing number of manufacturing leaders across Connecticut in terms of seeing high value in diversifying their workforce and not only welcoming, but potentially targeting and recruiting more women to come and work for them?
I think whether you're targeting women or men, I think it's important for manufacturers in the state to really think about how they're going to be engaging the workforce that comes in. I think in the past, the way that we've trained is either, you know, shadowing someone who went before you or the different mentoring. You know, some people aren't the most natural mentors. I think mentoring is great. I think it's absolutely necessary. But if people aren't natural mentors, helping the mentors get training so that they can be effective trainers to the young people coming in, I think would be helpful. And then engaging people in certain projects versus sort of just one area until that area is mastered. So that would be my suggestion.
Fantastic. Well, great advice and great to talk with you, Jill. Jill Bryant Mayer is president of the multi-generation Beat Industries with offices in Milford and Cheshire. Thanks for joining us and helping us celebrate Manufacturing Month here in Connecticut and getting ready to gear up for the 30th anniversary of the Federal Women's Business Ownership Act. Great to meet you, Jill. All right. Next, we're going to head out to Groton to Acme Wire Products. Their president is Mary Fitzgerald, and she's on the line with us now. Mary, great to talk with you. Thanks for joining us this morning.
Sure. I just want to mention that Acme Wire products is in Mystic, Connecticut.
Ah, I'm sorry.
And we are on the Stonington side.
Oh, okay. Mystic. So still out there in kind of a pocket of manufacturing around the military base, the sub base out there, and Electric Boat. That's kind of an area of the state where there's a lot of manufacturing, isn't it?
There's manufacturing pockets, but it's a little harder to find them than in some of the other areas of the state.
Mm-hmm.
The Mystic area does a great job of promoting the whaling,
sure,
the tourism,
and stuff.
The seaport, and they don't realize all of the other hidden gems that they have here with the manufacturers in the area.
Yeah.
But Acme Wire Products is a manufacturer of custom-engineered steel and stainless steel wire and metal component parts.
Mm-hmm.
We primarily focus on close tolerance applications. Some examples of that would include handles, levers, axles, fan, light and machine guards, shelves, grids, baskets that you would be using for processing or material handling, mostly in a factory.
Mm-hmm.
Supports, furniture components. We're a job shop manufacturer, so we have none of our own products. All the parts that we make are to customer specification on customer-owned tooling.
Okay. Well, you bring up an important point then, because I think a lot of people that might be listening to the program think of manufacturing as just, going in, if necessary, kind of suiting up to keep the environment clean, and building manufacturing items with the machines. But your company, it sounds like, does a lot of interface and creative development with your clients.
Yes. We are not product designers, but we assist a lot of designers and other manufacturers making the components better, more manufacturable,
yeah.
It's increasing the cost.
It's one thing to dream an idea, but it's another to get it out of the end of the manufacturing process in an efficient and cost-effective way, right?
That's true.
So do any of the products that that you make there at Acme Wire Products end up in consumers' hands? Anything I or any of our listeners might put our hands on that might have an Acme Wire product item in it?
Some of the things that you might recognize are we make baskets that go in high-end fishing and hunting coolers.
Mm.
We also make chair frames. Some of them used in the bottom or the frames of school chairs.
Oh, okay.
We make face masks for lacrosse helmets. We do some medical sterilization baskets and IV poles that you might see when you go into a medical clinic or a doctor's office. We make kitchen accessories, high-end sink like drainers and baskets.
Sure. Wow, that's quite a diverse line. How did you find your way into the company? Was manufacturing something that you decided on during your school years that you got into? What's your backstory?
Well, the company was started by my father, Edward Planetta, in 1970. And he would be bringing my sisters and brothers and I into work during the summers to do a lot of non-machine-oriented fabrication.
Mm-hmm.
We would be working either in the packing department, the quality department, doing some assemblies. As we got older, we would be filling in for vacationing employees in the office, running some of the computer programs, doing a lot of the other non-machine types of manufacturing jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And I came, when I graduated from college, I actually went to work for another wire fabricator in the state called Durable Wire in Brantford. And the main reason that I got the job there is because they had the same computer system that Acme Wire did, and I knew how to operate the system from my summers working at Acme Wire.
Oh, okay.
And I transitioned that position into an inside sales and customer service role. And after a few years there, I came back and started working at Acme Wire professionally. in the sales and marketing end.
Okay. Well, before we let you go, Mary, we'd like to hear some wise advice that you might have, whether it's for a young woman who might be eyeing a STEM career of some sort with an idea that manufacturing and staying here in Connecticut and working maybe even in their own hometown might offer them in terms of an opportunity. Tell us, or for a woman who might be just getting into a career as an adult or changing careers, to tell us what you would advise young women or women of any age in regards to considering manufacturing as an option.
Well, there are many career opportunities in manufacturing companies. Some of them are technical in nature, such as welding, CNC programming, machining, assembly or cost estimating, and others are more administrative, such as finance, human resources, even purchasing, shipping and logistics, management and the production control. So there are a lot of different opportunities in manufacturing for people with all different types of skills. And you really need to keep yourself open to new opportunities. Don't be afraid to apply to a job or to a position at a manufacturing company because you may have a preconceived notion of, you know, well, manufacturing, I'm going to be working in the shop, it's going to be, you know, dirty or loud or whatever. A lot of modern manufacturing companies aren't that way. And you may have to start your manufacturing career in one department, but then may be able to transition to another area after you've proven yourself or get a baseline of skills. Mm. And some skills can be transferable and valuable to different industries. So once you master a certain skill, you know, each thing can build upon another, and then you can advance your career either in a manufacturing company or in other opportunities as well. But most manufacturers are looking for people who are eager to learn, work hard, have, you know, good aptitude, and they will be able to train you many times on some of the more technical skills.
Hmm. And are you finding that the organizations, schools, community colleges, professional academies that do the kind of training that provide you with your workforce are pretty much in sync with your needs at Acme Wire Products and the needs of your peers in the manufacturing industries across Connecticut?
Well, Acme Wire works with our Regional Manufacturing Association, which is the Eastern Advanced Manufacturing Alliance, or EMA, that focuses on basically the eastern portion of Connecticut.
Mm-hmm.
And that, so EMA works in conjunction with both the regional community technical colleges, such as Three Rivers and Quinebaug Valley, to ensure that the programs that the schools are providing meet the needs of local manufacturers. So when the manufacturers have a need, we reach right out to those contacts at the school to say, you know, we need more training in metrology or programming or, you know, quality concepts or whatever. And the technical schools have been very supportive to the manufacturing community needs. The students that are enrolled in these programs are readily employable by local companies and sometimes are getting job offers before they even graduate.
Yeah, we're hearing a lot about that on the western end of the state, how some of these career fairs at the colleges, these young people are going in sometimes months ahead of their certification or graduation, and they're sitting pretty because they're going to literally take a day or two off after graduation and walk right into a job that's waiting for them.
Yep, and we're also reaching heavily into the secondary high schools, both at the technical end and the town regional schools, because there are meaningful career paths available to students in a variety of pathways, not solely college preparation.
Great. Well, I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, we have many employees who started their career at Acme Wire Products, you know, as a general machine operator, entry-level production worker, who have been trained in CNC operation, programming, and other higher level skills internally. You know, we're utilizing some of the state programs available for incumbent worker training to enhance the skills of our existing employees to give them an opportunity for higher pay grades and more skill-based knowledge.
Fantastic. Well, it's been very educational to speak with you, Mary Fitzgerald, and thank you so much for helping participate in our celebration of October as Manufacturing Month here ahead of the 30th anniversary of the Federal Women's Business Ownership Act coming up later this week as we broadcast the program. Mary Fitzgerald's company is Acme Wire Products in Mystic, Connecticut. Mary, we thank you for being part of the program this morning and all this great information. Thanks so much. Do you love Connecticut? If you do, there are hundreds of nonprofit agencies, community groups, and grassroots causes that would love to have your support. You can learn about many of them through Love CT. Just go to our radio station website, hit the event guide tab, and click onto Love CT to help the many causes supported by Connoisseur Media. I'm Director of Public Affairs, John Voquette. We'll be back to the award-winning For the People and pick up on our special report on women in Connecticut manufacturing right after this news. Fall is upon us, and so are flu clinics. But if you're getting your flu shot every year and you're watching out for your physical health, it's a great time to also check in on your mental health. During October and November, free screenings are available to help you or someone you're concerned about assess whether you or they may be experiencing symptoms of a mental health or substance misuse disorder and could benefit from treatment. You can take an online screening test now in English or Spanish, or do it in person at one of the many wellness tables sponsored throughout the region throughout October and early November. To take the online screener and find out where to get screened in person, just visit Southwest Connecticut's Regional Mental Health Board at healthymindsct.org. All right. Our next visit is going to be over to Monroe, where we're going to meet Lucy Voves. She is president and CEO of Church Hill Classics. Lucy, thanks for joining us this morning.
Good morning.
So first, tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got into the manufacturing business.
Well, I got into the manufacturing business because I had an idea and I started a little moonlighting business, framing and selling artwork of the main building on my college campus. So I learned how to do picture framing, and that's how I started. And I had a lot of customers who said, I love your framed art, but will you frame my diploma to match? And we also had people who said, can you put our school name on there so that people can read more easily where we went to school, because a lot of diplomas are in Latin.
Mm.
So that was how I got started, and my background was really in marketing, and I had to learn about manufacturing because I had no familiarity, but it started with a table in the basement, and it's now much larger. We're in 47,000 square feet and have a little over 100 employees.
Wow. Did you start out with a talent or an inclination toward art? And that's how you learned how to frame, or did you sort of start as the as more of a craftsperson who was just building frames?
Well, I was an art history major in college, so I always had that interest, and I liked doing things with my hands, so mm-hmm. it was kind of a nice natural fit. I liked to be able to make something and see what I did.
Mm-hmm.
My background prior to this was in consumer products. I worked for Procter & Gamble and wrote memos and kind of had a usual desk job, and this was a nice outlet for me to actually physically do something, see the fruits of my labor every day.
Mm-hmm.
So it started as a sideline, and then when it really took off, I decided to take advantage of the opportunity and see if I could make it fly as a business.
Right. Well, if we came up to Monroe and visited the manufacturing floor at Churchill Classics, first of all, do you have a lot of women working for you?
We actually do. We have about an 80% female workforce.
Wow. So as we're looking across the floor, the manufacturing floor, what are we seeing in terms of equipment? I don't imagine it's 100 people sitting at workbenches with wooden glue and putting things together. Tell us about how this has evolved into something more automated, if that's the case.
Well, parts of it are automated, and some of it is actually very much hands-on.
Mm-hmm.
So you would see computerized mat cutters, you would see foil embossing machines, you would see we have new technology dimensional color printers, which were actually something we were able to get through a state grant program that helped us fund that new technology. You would see saws that are fairly computerized for measuring systems and joining equipment.
Mm-hmm.
So you would see people operating that equipment, but you would also see a lot of hands-on work, like placing medallions precisely and straight inside of cutouts that are above the diploma, and we insert school seal medallions or athletic logos. You would see people cutting what's called a fillet, which is like a frame within a frame that goes inside of the mat opening.
Mm-hmm.
You would see people assembling the frames, cutting glass in some cases. So it's somewhat automated, but we're not overall as automated as a lot of manufacturing in the state, because much of what we do is one-off, custom-made, and it just requires that personal touch and a person looking at it.
Well, I imagine you have some engineers or folks with engineering or that STEM background working for you, but it sounds like folks could actually come to Churchill Classics without a huge amount of technical or educational or engineering background and still enjoy a great career.
That's absolutely true.
Well, let's switch gears and talk to young ladies or adults who might be considering a career in manufacturing. What are a few of the things that you discovered as you advanced from kind of a little basement cottage business into the growing framework that is now Churchill Classics?
Well, I don't think I would be intimidated by manufacturing. I think a lot of women are good at multitasking, good at process, pretty good at being efficient in what they do, and that's really a lot of what manufacturing is all about. I didn't know much about manufacturing, and as an early entrepreneur, you kind of have to be a jack of all trades, so I was in there hands-on and trying to work on the best ways that we could produce the products, but ultimately, I got to a point where I was able to hire people who had more expertise in manufacturing than I do. So you don't have to be a total expert, and when you get to the right point, you can hire people who are really good at where maybe you don't have as much experience. And that model has worked well for me, but I don't consider it at all to be a man's world. I feel like if you can provide good leadership and guidance and inspire people, that women can be just as effective in manufacturing as men.
Hmm. Well, we do hear a lot about how Connecticut is helping to influence a whole new generation of younger women to consider STEM careers, including those in manufacturing. And here we are in October, Manufacturing Month, and just ahead of the 30th anniversary of the Federal Women's Business Ownership Act. And so I guess it bears discussing for the moment or two that we have left that it's not all about working on the manufacturing floor either. A couple of our other guests have talked about the diverse range of jobs that are available under the umbrella of manufacturing that don't actually involve putting your hands on product or machines.
That's definitely true. For us, systems and technology are very important. We produce all of our products custom to order, so we have sophisticated systems that allow us to create configurations and manufacture exactly what's needed. So we have people that are involved in IT, in logistics. We actually have in-house marketing here, and that's really important. We sell our products through college bookstores all over the country, and one of the things we do is we work with them and provide them with marketing tools and expertise so that they can be successful selling our products, because we really find we have to do more than just ship it into the store and wait for it to sell. And we also have a website, diplomaframe.com, and we're able to manage and maintain that entire website here ourselves. We do all of our design work, and we also can add new products and manage the website. So there are so many aspects, finance, customer service. We have real people who answer the phone. So there are lots of opportunities available in a manufacturing company like ours.
And I imagine it feels great to be able to work, maybe not in your hometown, but at least in your home state, and be able to provide a very viable product successfully and be able to compete economically against companies that might be making these similar kinds of products outside the U.S.
That's absolutely true. I think that's one of the most rewarding parts for me, is knowing that we're providing good quality jobs. And we have also been able to take advantage of some state programs that provide matching grants for educational opportunities. And that's really helped us give people exposure to new ideas, new skills, and create paths so that people can grow with us and so that we can grow in our use of technology and new resources and online marketing and be more competitive.
Fantastic. Well, it was great to talk with you. Lucy Vose is president and CEO of Church Hill Classics, located in Monroe, and she is helping us celebrate October as Manufacturing Month here in Connecticut. Great to meet you, Lucy, and great to hear about your fantastic success, and look forward to visiting with you again. Thanks.
Thank you very much, John.
As we wrap up our special report celebrating the 30th anniversary of the Federal Women's Business Ownership Act here in October, which is Manufacturing Month, we're so pleased to welcome our final guest, Beverly Dacey, who's president of Amedix Products in Bridgeport. Beverly, thanks for joining us on the program. Tell us a little bit about yourself and the company. First, a little bit about your product line and how you came into this leadership position.
My company is a manufacturing facility in Bridgeport. We have always been in Bridgeport, and it was established in 1958 by my parents, Sylvia and Peter Fazzi. My dad was a printer and encountered all kinds of frustrations with printers' inks. And consequently, he and a chemist friend developed a formula for stain removal specifically suited to inks on skin. And how to get hands clean and such. And over time, the product has evolved now to become the exclusively formulated stain remover product that is soap-based. It's not solvent, a solvent that will work on fabrics and skin and surfaces for taking out not only inks, but all other kinds of stains, food stains and blood and grease and dye and all the things that make us all crazy when we spill things on our favorite shirt.
Wow, it's pretty amazing.
So we are in the business of making stain removal products.
Very good.
Probably proudest accomplishment with our product is that we are the only stain removal product that is recommended by Newell Brands, who make Sharpie, because Amedix will actually take out Sharpie.
Mm-hmm. And your client base is global?
It is. Yes, yes.
Wow.
We sell all over the world.
Well, when you think about niche products, your family certainly has hit the mark. But at what point did you, was this always an assumption that you would move into this business in some capacity, and eventually you found yourself in the leadership role of president?
Absolutely not. It was actually the polar opposite. I have two brothers, and I think that my father specifically, less so my mother, anticipated that if the company were to stay in the family, it likely would be taken over by one or both of my brothers. And over time, they went into different career directions and decided that this really didn't suit them. I always had an interest, had been in academia, and when the time came where my parents hit a crossroads, I stepped up and said, no, I would like to take over the company. And my mother compelled him to think seriously about it and decided that, yes, they would pass it on to me. And here we go.
Very good.
So I took over in 2005.
Mm-hmm. Excellent.
And then I have four children. They're two pairs of twins, actually.
Wow.
And as they finished college and did their thing out there for a while. They eventually have come into the company, and now all four of them work with me.
Wow, that's wonderful.
So it's terrific, yes. And one's an engineer, so he was perfectly suited to take over all of the plant operations and formulation. And so I said, I have this tailor-made employee base here, which has been really interesting. So we are your quintessential family business.
Well, that's fantastic. as we spoke a few moments before we turned on the microphone, an important thing that we haven't really talked a lot about with our other guests over the course of the report has been the valuable element of apprenticeship. Let's talk a little bit about that when you're speaking directly to women that might be listening and thinking about what am I going to do or where can I go? Or I'm hearing that there's a lot going on in manufacturing, and maybe that's an area either as a student I should focus on as a future career, or as an adult, someone entering the workforce for the first time or transitioning in the workforce, maybe apprenticeship is going to be a valued element of that advancement.
Yeah, well, what I think is very much a misconception these days is the perception that out there in the workforce, manufacturing is a very boring, repetitive type of workday. And actually, it's, I believe, the opposite. The world of manufacturing has evolved to something extraordinarily dynamic. And who I speaking to the women out there, I speak both to people who are looking at career change and also to people guiding their daughters in options for their future and things to consider. And recently, about a year or two ago, Manufacturing Innovation Fund, which is a state-sponsored fund, and I sit on that board, we established an apprenticeship program whereby people can basically get on-the-job training, be compensated for that training, get exposed to different opportunities out there in the workplace, in manufacturing. And I think it's an ideal setting to determine whether your skill sets and interests are suited to those employment opportunities that are out there. Once you get into that arena, what I think people probably don't realize is that manufacturing is so dynamic. You may find one thing you're doing at one time that you outgrow it, or you want to move on to something else, or there's something another dimension in that operation that is of greater interest to you. And it's very easy to move out and move on to something else within a company or a company's operation. Because the manufacturing world has so many layers. It's not just production. It's not just supply chain. It's not just marketing. It's all of that together. Mm. And successful manufacturers really rely on the input of everybody in their operation from all the different facets to make those companies successful. And that's where I think if you're someone who doesn't want to be bored, that's the place to go.
Great. Wise advice and good information from our final guest in our special report this morning. Beverly Dacey is president of Amidex Products in Bridgeport. If you got ink on your hands or a little spot of blood on your jersey, chances are you're going to go to her company to get that stain out. So, Beverly, really great to meet you, and thank you for the valuable advice here as we close out our special report during October Manufacturing Month, and in the next few days as we look toward the celebration of the 30th anniversary of the Federal Women's Business Ownership Act. Great to meet you, and thank you so much for helping close out our program. All right. Well, we're hanging out in the sun on a crisp fall day here in Middlefield, Connecticut, talking about a really important organization with a long and dear friend. John Mealy is here. He's with Family Reentry. He's a mentoring coordinator for the Men's Transitions Program. And we're here talking about Transitions Mentoring Program at Manson Youth Institute in Cheshire, which helps young men age 14 to 22 transition from incarceration back into the communities where they live. We also have a very special guest, Jezreel Vasquez, here with us. And we're going to invite you to a really special activity that's happening next weekend as we broadcast this program. So, John, first of all, just give us the quick elevator conversation on what you do, because you've been doing it for quite a long time.
Yes, I have. I started out in 2000 as a volunteer mentor, and eventually I became the coordinator of this program in 2006. And what we do is we meet in a group setting with 15 to 20 young men, and after 10 to 12 weeks, they graduate and they get a volunteer mentor, and they continue to get help and guidance with these mentors. I continue to be in their lives, and we also offer, while at Manson, educational opportunities through Yale Tutors for pre-GED and post-GED classes. And more importantly, John, when they are released, Family Reentry, myself and Daeed McKnight are ready and able to continue our support and guidance when they're released, which is the most important part of this program.
So tell us just quickly how Transitions Mentoring fits into a kind of, or I should say, under the umbrella of what Family Reentry is, because Family Reentry came along first and Transitions developed out of one of their initiatives, right?
Yes. Family Reentry is has a lot of different programs since 1985 in Connecticut, and they work with a women, adults and youth, and they help people transition back into the community after being incarcerated in the prison system in Connecticut. Their help has been very valuable to a lot of people's lives to make a difference, and they continue to be the leading organization and program in the state of Connecticut as a help to transition people back into the community.
Well, I remember back right after we met and getting to know this organization, and it was so impressive to me, and talking to some of the gentlemen like Jezreel, who I met at the time back near the beginning of this program, and they were developing entire employment programs based on skilled workmanship, painting, carpentry, and things like that. And these were guys who were coming out of incarceration who were set on staying on the right track for the rest of their lives, and not just helping themselves but helping others, because they knew that in many cases a lot of these individuals wouldn't ever get the opportunity unless they got an opportunity with someone who could relate to where they were coming from. But at the same time, the result was that there was that empathy factor. There was that deep background knowledge on some of the issues and challenges that these individuals who are coming under their tutelage and under their care, you know, they could relate to what was going on with them when they left the job site, when they had to go back to the neighborhood, back to their friends, back to their homes, right?
Absolutely. And you make a very important point. The empathy that is expressed and felt by the people that work at Family Reentry is the key to helping these men and women, especially in the Mentoring Transitions Program, because of the youth. We have the empathy gives us an understanding and an open mind and no judgment on helping with direction and guidance. And we do help with we partnership with community workplaces to help secure a job. We have educational opportunities, and all the pieces that make up this program, from Family Reentry to the staff at Manson Youth, they're all a part of offering the opportunity to these young men to be able to bring the pieces to into their action, to have that opportunity become a real success in their lives. And it really comes down to these young men like Jezreel that do the action behind our support and guidance. If it wasn't for them and their courage, their integrity, and their drive to succeed in changing their life, this program wouldn't mean much. And the more years that I'm involved, the more we are witnessing young men that are changing their lives, and they're giving back to other young men in the community, and especially young men that are coming out of Manson.
And a lot of these people wouldn't really be able to kind of have that door to step through, that door of opportunity, if you will, if it wasn't for being given that chance by someone who'd been there themselves.
Absolutely. And that's the point of this program. Jezreel and I were talking about that driving up here. We opened the door, but these young men have the courage and the strength to walk through that door and to do the work necessary. We always emphasize in these groups, these young men have to take the responsibility for their change. And that's what's happening. The more that do that and the success, it kind of spills over and it gets as an example to other young men. For instance, when we do groups, we have we bring in young men that have been in our groups that are now out and being successful, and they come back and they talk to our group. That does more in that 2 hours that we're together than me and Daeed speaking without that connection for a long time. Mm-hmm. And Jezreel will be coming into Manson soon, and he'll be an example just like young men before us.
Excellent. Well, we're intending to run a special report on this initiative, both revisiting Family Reentry, who's been a guest on our program probably about 6 or 7 times since we got to know them back in the early 90s. But also, before we go, we want to talk about an opportunity that's coming up sooner than later to make sure people are aware of how they can not only get to know the Family Reentry and Transitions mentoring program at Manson better, but also provide the support to keep this program going, because state funding for this program got cut a few years ago. But due to the belief that people have and the faith and the evidence that people have in seeing the success of people like Jezreel and the many others who are now acting as teachers versus students of the system, this is really important to continue getting this financial support for the program. Tell us about the event you have planned.
Yes, on October 26th at 7 o'clock, it's a Friday night in Orange, Connecticut at the Orange Hills Country Club. We're having an event. Just show up. We're having some food, some wine and beer, some dessert and coffee after. And you will see and be able to talk to some young men that have actually succeeded and as a result of this opportunity this program gives them. It is an event that is necessary because, as you said, the state stopped funding us a few years ago, and we have continued to bring this program through people that believe in what we do because they witness the success of what we do. And again, it is about these young men having the courage and the strength to succeed in that with that success. So I would love to have you come out. All are welcome, and to help out if you can in any way, because there's other ways to help us. You could be a volunteer mentor. You could be you could have an opportunity to offer a job, which is important. You know, our post-release initiative is so important. That first year and beyond is so important for these young men to have that continued support and guidance, so they have the ability to have a little rough spot and reach out and get some counseling and support in through that rough spot, just like I did when I was growing up, or I'm sure like you did, John, and like all the listeners, I'm sure also had some rough spots, but they had people in their lives to help them through those rough spots. That's what we do.
Well, certainly if they go to your event on the 26th at the Orange Country Club, they're going to get a firsthand immersion into both the experiences of these individuals and the good that come out of them and this transitions program. And what we're going to do is, first of all, we want to let people know if they're actually hearing a replay of this program, the event may be over, but they could still get to know and support Family Reentry and the Transitions Program, and they can learn all about it by going to familyreentry.org and checking out what that organization does, and click the button or the pull down that'll give them a little bit more of a deep dive into family reentry. We're going to come back next week after the event is over and broadcast our second part of the program, which is going to feature some conversation with Jezreel Vasquez, who is just coming out of the program and is benefiting from the donations and the support and the success of Family Reentry in the Transitions Mentoring Program at Manson. In the meantime, we're going to say farewell for now. We hope folks come out on the 26th. If they want to learn more, they just need to go to familyreentry.org and check out the event that's coming up on the 26th for Transitions Mentoring Program. And we will be back shortly. And they can also, as John was saying, can use that website as an opportunity to make a donation. So we hope folks will tune in next week to hear the second half of our conversation with the folks from Transitions Mentoring Program. And in the meantime, good luck with the event, John, and Jezreel, I'm sure you'll be attending. So we'll come back and talk. Folks, come back and hear the rest of our story in next week's program. Thanks, John.
Thank you.
You've been listening to our award-winning public affairs program, For the People. The opinions expressed on this broadcast represent those of our guests and host. If you have a suggestion for a guest, an issue, or a PSA relevant to the audience and communities we serve, you must make a request for airtime in writing to me via email at john.voket, that's john.voket, at connoisseurct.com. We do not accept pitches or requests for coverage by phone. Remember, no part of this program may be copied, disseminated, or rebroadcast without permission of Connoisseur Media. Our public file, reflecting the full scope of our station's responsiveness to critical issues in the communities we serve, can be reviewed upon request during normal business hours at 440 Wheeler's Farms Road in Milford or on our station website. Our theme music is by Rick Miller and Scotts, with original music by Noel Viette. I'm Director of Public Affairs, John Voket. Join us again at this time next week for more conversation and important information on the award-winning For the People. Don't forget, you can listen to this and other For the People podcasts anytime on iTunes or under the podcast tab on our station's website. Until this time next week, thanks for listening.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together, because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.